For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switchtowellbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.
Broadcaster and longtime friend of Red Leg Nation, Mr. Chris Welsh. Chris, as always, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me on. It seems like it's been a long time, so I guess we've got some catching up to do.
Yeah, we really do. Let's start with the front office. There's been a change in the front office this offseason with Dick Williams taking over the GM duties. How are these guys different in their approach to running the ball club?
Well, you know, first of all, we're not exactly sure how that change is going to happen. I think that the important thing is that changeover has 100% cooperation, and that they have a really good idea of the direction that they're going to go in, with one guy giving up the reins, Walt Jocketty, and Dick Williams receiving those. Now, I haven't seen anything that would indicate that they wouldn't be on the same page, but in any kind of transformation, that's important. The way I think they do it is old school versus new school. If you want to boil it down like that, Walt Jocketty has been well known as to have an eye on the game. His advisors are former scouts, former managers, pitching coaches like Jerry Walker, Cam Bonifay, Kevin Towers, guys that have had a history in the game really before any of the number crunching and analytics have ever come around. So it's that's one side of it. And then Dick Williams brings a newer approach. He brings more analytics. He's hired a number of people that are, you know, for the lack of a better term, you know, math experts, statistical experts. They're able to do the kind of analysis that I think is being done all over baseball now. So I think you're going to be a shift in a little bit more towards the analytic part than there has been in the past. Not that the Reds have been in the Stone Age in that, but I think you're going to see a little bit more aggressiveness when it comes to analytics.
You think there'll be any noticeable difference to the fans as to how the ball club's being run?
I don't think so. Most of those things are all behind the scenes, and unless you're really watching, you know, you may see a difference in the number of defensive shifts that are going on. You may see some changes in lineups if you're really paying close attention. But if you're, you know, most of the fans, 90 to 95% of the fans are turning the TV on, or they're going out to the ballpark, and they're just enjoying the game. They're not noticing that, you know, this guy's batting second against left-handed hitters and sixth against right-handed hitters. You know, so those are the kind of things that, the members of Red Leg Nation will pick up, and most fans don't.
Let's go into the dugout, Chris. The Reds made the decision to bring back Brian Parrish and the whole coaching staff. Did that surprise you at all?
Not one bit. Now, I think the Reds feel like this. They're still legitimately a year away from being, you know, up there to contend with whoever's going to be at the top of the National League Central. Presumably that'll be the Cardinals and the Cubs. So I still think that they have some young players that they still need to learn a little bit more to get more experience. So, you know, the one fallacy of that, though, Bill, is that, you know, you don't pick the year in which you're going to compete. Sometimes the year picks you.
Right.
You know, based on the number of injuries that you have, the number of players that are playing maybe over their head, giving you career years that you didn't expect, and so on and so forth. So sometimes there's a huge luck factor that goes into that. But I think that the Reds feel like, you know, Brian Price wasn't given really a team that could compete at all this year. They got off to a horrible start. He didn't do anything down in the second half of the season when the Reds had a very good record. compared to the rest of the league, to diminish his chances of coming back. He didn't piss anybody off in the front office. He didn't alienate any of the players. I think the players like him. They respect him. And I think they're going to give him another shot to manage a ball club that will have higher expectations next year.
How tough do you think it is, Chris, for a manager to have a team that's A, young, and B, is in a rebuild mode with conflicting pressures? I mean, he's got a pressure to win versus teaching and getting the guys ready to compete.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with that question, Bill. I think that's why it's so important that the manager and the front office are on the same page, because he's got to go to them and say, listen, you're not going to judge me by my win-loss record at the end of the year, right? Because I want to play these young players. I want to put young pitchers in high leverage situations that we wouldn't normally put them in. But I have to have your backing that I'll be back here next year, or that I've got a contract on its way. So that was the conundrum, really, that Brian Price found himself in. I think he wanted to, he managed like he wanted to win a lot of games. We saw Jose Peraza, for instance, up on the big league roster, seemingly for a month and never getting a start. And then eventually getting back to the minor league. So it's important, I think, that the manager and front office are on the same page. And I'm not so sure that they were all year long. I think at the end of the year they probably were. I think Brian Price was just trying to win ball games.
What do you think he needs to do to keep the job beyond 2017? Because honestly, there aren't many, if any, managers that I can think of that survive a rebuild.
Well, you're right. And, you also have to ask yourself, who else is out there?
Right.
But let's go back to what Brian Price has to do. I think, number one, he's got to have show improvement this year over next year. I mean, this year, 2017, that is, over 2016. And, you have some nice pieces here. You really do. I mean, if this ball club had just had a little bit better relief pitching in the beginning of the year, who knows where they would have been able to go, because they had a pretty solid lineup through and through, and they played very good defense. So I think, Brian, I think what they'll look at is how's your record in 2017, and are you the guy to take this ball club to the next step?
Yeah, and you mentioned, talking about who's out there, and I'm gonna hit me one off the wall here real quick. What do you think of the Barry Larkin managing the Reds rumors?
Well, I think that's what they are, is rumors. Managing now is not anything like it was when Barry was a player. And it's 24-7. I mean, these guys get to the ballpark at 11 o'clock, at 12 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game. They're analyzing and reanalyzing and analyzing some more, even before the players begin to show up. They're held to different standards, I think, that they had been before as far as time commitment. Everything is so detailed now. Everybody has a checklist that has to have boxes checked off. The strength guy does. The trainers do. The pitching coaches and the assistant pitching coaches. Same for the hitting coaches and so on. So it's not seat of the pants anymore at all. So I think that, it takes a huge time commitment. And I'm not so sure that Barry is a guy that wants to do it quite like that. Yeah. I think that that's what ownership demands nowadays. I think Barry could do a marvelous job as a manager at ball club. He's a smart baseball guy. He gets along with people. He commands respect. He was a tremendous player, which will help you when you go to a player and say, hey, I want you to do this. And they look at you if you never played in the major leagues and say, well, what do you know about it?
Right.
So you can't say that to Barry Larkin. But at the same time, I don't know if nowadays is the time that you bring in, a former superstar. Because remember what happened when they went and hired Tony Perez, or even Pete Rose, or former players that were really great players with the Reds. When you hire them, someday you have to understand you're going to probably have to fire them and let
right.
them go.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes very difficult. Sometimes what looks like an easy hire turns out to be a very difficult fire.
Let's talk about some players for a minute, Chris. Let's start at the top. Let's talk about Joey. He had another Joey Votto season, but it wasn't easy for him. At the end of May, he was really struggling. But his second half was better than last year's, which I never would have believed was possible. Do you think the Reds fans grasp the level of greatness they're seeing and hitting from Joey Votto?
I hope they do, because it's something that it's such a rarity. I've never seen it. I mean, two seasons in a row where the second half is just clearly the best hitter in baseball. I mean, and I go by how many outs does a guy make? And I know a lot of people don't like the on-base percentage things and so on, but, you know, I've always been on that wagon, really, to be honest with you. And as a former pitcher, I never wanted to pitch against guys that were on base all the time, because now I got to pitch out of the stretch, and that's when bad things happen. So Votto is just a difficult out. I hope the Reds fans grasp it. I think they do. But I think until Votto puts a whole season together, I mean, you can't take a 2-month hiccup and then come back and be Ted Williams the rest of the year and get the same credit that you would if you just were solid all year long. So, you know, he came very close to doing something like that, but his start this year didn't help him at all.
Where would you have Joey on your MVP ballot if you had one?
Oh, I probably have him. Definitely have him in the top four. Yep. You know, there's no question about it. Even Joey Votto himself said, you know, in order to be the MVP, you got to be a complete player. And I think Joey, over the last couple of years, has taken a step back defensively, and I think he's taken a step backwards as far as being a base runner. I think the team part of Joey Votto is beginning to come out a little bit. And interestingly enough, for me, it happened when Joey saw his friend Jay Bruce traded to New York. All of us, you know, it used to be Jay and Joey, and they would hang out and so on around the batting cage. And I'm not privy to go into the clubhouse when the clubhouse is closed, and I don't hang out with these guys on the road or anything. And I'm sure he's got other friends. But, you know, on the field during batting practice, when most of the talking back and forth is going on, it was a lot with Joey and Jay Bruce. Well, now that Bruce is gone, Joey's talking to guys like Scott Schebler, Billy Hamilton, Eugenio Suarez. I mean, these guys are all beginning to hear some nuggets coming from one of the best hitters in the game. And I think it's a benefit. And I think that part of this game came forward a little bit, but defensively and on the base pass, that went backward a little bit.
Do you see him as being on a Hall of Fame trajectory?
Yeah, I sure do. There's no question about it.
How many more years, good years, you know, big years, do you think he has to have?
I can't tell you that because I really don't know. As you know, I don't have a vote. I object vehemently to the way that a lot of these writers, you know, when you ask a writer, hey, is this guy a Hall of Fame player? He goes, well, let me go check the numbers. Well, I mean, if it was as simple as checking the numbers, you could write an algorithm and figure that out, right?
Yep.
So I think there's a lot more to it. I think that, you know, Votto needs some great years. There's no question about it. But at the same time, I think he's a Hall of Fame caliber player.
Do you, moving on a little bit, do you see a conundrum with the Brandon Phillips situation, and do you see it being resolved this offseason?
Well, if you're talking about the conundrum being Brandon here in his last year, Reds wanting to move him, and he has 10-5 rights, which labels him to veto any trade. Yeah, there is a conundrum there, and I don't see it happening. I mean, you know, Brandon would have moved last year when he was offered a deal to go to the Nationals, but he wanted more money to do that. This is what happens traditionally with every player that has a veto trade rights. He goes to the club and says, you want to make this trade? This is what it's going to cost you. And I'll give you a quick example as to how the Chicago Cubs ended up with Kyle Hendricks. You know, they had a deal on July the 20th, 2012, with the Braves for Delgado, Randall Delgado. And Dempster, for Ryan Dempster. Ryan Dempster was supposed to pitch that night. The deal was done at 5 o'clock. The Cubs said, we'll sit on it until the next day. So when Dempster pitched, because it was too late to pull him out of the start, the next day he wakes up, his cell phone's blowing up, he's got all these friends calling and saying, heard you got traded to the Braves. So he went back to the Cubs and they said, hey, you said you were going to waive your trade rights. He says, yeah, but you're supposed to run this stuff by me right now, and you didn't do it. I'm vetoing the trade. So then 10 days of very awkwardness goes on between the Cubs front office and Ryan Dempster. They finally get the Rangers on the phone an hour before the deadline, and they make a deal, and the Cubs tell them, you know, just get that guy who was recommended, whoever he was. And it turned out to be Kyle Hendricks. So, you know, players are all the time using their rights of veto power. And in the case of Brandon, he's going to be 36 years old when he comes out of his contract. he wanted to have a little bit more money, a little security at the end of that contract. The Nationals were unable to do that to him for him, and so he vetoed it. And I would be very surprised if he allowed himself to be traded somewhere else right now, unless it was a place that he really wanted to go.
Is he the Reds' starting second baseman on opening day?
Well, I suppose he is. I mean, he had a pretty good year, didn't he? You know, the Reds have to figure out what they're going to do. I mean, well, this is really puts everybody in a tough spot. Puts front office in a tough spot. Mm-hmm. Puts the manager in a tough spot. Puts Brandon in a tough spot. Puts Jose Peraza or Dilson Herrera in a tough spot, whoever may be the second baseman. These things usually have a way of figuring themselves out, and I think that's probably what the Reds are hoping.
And Zach Cozart is kind of in the same spot without the power. Is Zach Cozart on this team opening day, do you believe?
Yeah, unless they can trade Zach. It was, you know, I'm heartbroken for Zach, to be honest with you, because he's such a great kid. He's a hard worker. He thought he was coming back from that knee surgery and was going to be just fine. I mean, he's turning on the other side of 30 years old. And, you know, that's not kind to middle infielders if you just look statistically and historically on those guys that turn 30 and have major injuries, especially leg injuries. Their production begins to go down a little bit. And he was having a really good year, Zach was. And but I think, you know, you got to ask yourself going forward. I mean, are you going to pay Zach Cozart $4.5 million or $5 million on this team and you have an adequate backup to play who may be your shortstop for the future? I think a lot of people, when they got Jose Peraza, had already convinced themselves that he couldn't play shortstop. I think he changed their minds about that.
Is Cozart, is he arbitration eligible this year?
Yes, he is.
So they could non-tender him. Do you think that might happen?
I don't think they're going to non-tender him, no.
Okay.
I think that they want to prove that he's going to be healthy to play, so they'll probably tender him. Go to arbitration if they have to, have him in spring training, and then try to deal.
Do you think if he and Brandon are on this team on opening day, does that say anything about the Reds' commitment to a rebuild?
No, I think that they've tried. I mean, they just had bad luck. I mean, they thought they had a deal for Brandon. They thought they had Zach Cozart in a position where he would be able to be on the trade market this winter, but with a bad knee, you don't know what that market is. So I think they tried. But sometimes just forces work against you.
Okay, you mentioned Jose Peraza a number of times, and I think he's proven that he's major league ready. Where do you think he lines up most of the time in 2017? Any guesses?
I think he probably lines up at shortstop, and I think he bats second.
Do you think the Reds are worried about his walk rate?
Well, no, I think it's something that there's a couple of different theories on that. Bill, you may even know more about me, but, you know, one theory is, well, hey, if you don't have a walk rate in the minor leagues, you're not going to all of a sudden learn a strike zone in the big leagues.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think I agree with that. I think that Peraza shows me the ability to hit the ball the other way, which means you're hitting it late out of the catcher's mitt. He doesn't take a big swing. He's willing to. I mean, once you get him around the league a little bit, and he's a smart ball player. I can tell you that right now. He will adapt, and I think his walk rate is going to go up.
Okay, I'm going to make you referee a disagreement now, Chris. Red League Nation.
All right, go ahead.
You know Chad Dotson, our founder of Red League Nation, and he and I have a big We have a big disagreement on Billy Hamilton, and I'm going to read Chad's quote about Billy Hamilton first. So Chad said, and I'm reading this quote, "I think he's a comic book superhero. In all seriousness, I believe he's the most exciting player in baseball, the best defensive center fielder in the game, and the best base runner. Given that he made real progress at the plate this year and he's still young, I think he stands a decent chance of bumping his on-base percentage up to around .335, at which point he'll be an all-star." I guess my question to you is, do you buy that? I still have questions about Billy. Whether the surge in his on-base percentage was a spike or a trend, I hope it's the latter, and his durability. Can you be a great player and not stay on the field?
Well, no, you can't, and that's the one thing holding him back, but sometimes that's the most unpredictable thing of all. But everything else that Dotson wrote, You know, short of being a superhero, I agree with him. I think the kid, I mean, hey, I know Billy. You know, I've gotten to know him very well. And I believe in Billy. I really do. I think that he's got great baseball acumen. He may not even know what that means, but he gets it. And he's willing to work hard. And he really changed. I mean, I think Botto had a huge hand in this. And I think that, you know, he's willing to learn. And I just think that this guy's going to be, you're not going to have to worry about Billy Hamilton. He's the guy that everybody else on every other team wishes that he was on their team. I can tell you from talking to managers on the other team, they want to know, is Hamilton healthy? How is he doing?
He's the guy that kind of
in a postseason type game. You know, if the Reds can get to the postseason, he's a game changer. There aren't too many guys in baseball that are like that.
Okay. So you're siding with Chad. That's okay.
Well, he is the founder, anyway, after all.
Yeah, right? I know. He's the guru, so.
Is he the guy that signs my checks?
Yeah, he's the guy that signs all those big checks with all the zeros.
Okay.
I don't think there's any doubt the biggest surprise for the Reds in 2016 was Adam Duvall. Do you think he's a long-term answer in the outfield? I mean, he's not a kid, but he had a heck of a first year in the big leagues.
Well, he did have a heck of a first year in the big leagues, and he's a great kid, and he has a lot of reason why you'd hope that he was going to be able to continue what he did. But I think that, you know, you have to also remind yourself that Adam Duvall was, what, 27 or 28 years old?
He's 27.
He is, you know, just getting a chance for the first time. he's another guy that doesn't walk a whole lot. I really don't know how to read it. I love Adam Duvall. I mean, he's one of the nicest young men you're ever going to meet. I think you need to have somebody in the lineup that has this kind of pop. I love his approach. His approach is to hit the fastball the other way and pull the breaking ball, which is you get out in front of it and you pop some balls down the line for home runs. He's got a home run bat and bat speed without looking like he overswings, if you know what I mean. So just from a baseball standpoint, I like his approach. Long term, I don't know what you mean by long term. You're talking about 3 years, you're talking about 8 years.
Let's say 3 to 5.
I don't know. Let's see what's in the pipeline. In the meantime, I keep Adam Duvall out there until somebody pushes him out of the way.
I also thought he played much better defense than was expected, considering it was his first year really playing the outfield.
Well, the guy was a shortstop in high school. He was a third baseman in college, and he played, you know, first base and third base in the minor leagues. So, you know, you essentially have an infielder, you know, playing the outfield for you, which is always a good thing rather than the other way around. Remember they tried to convert Adam Dunn to be a first baseman?
Yeah, that didn't work out.
I'd rather have the infielder going to the outfielder anytime.
Let's finish up the outfield, and let's talk about Scott Schebler. Is he a starter? Is he a platoon guy, a left-handed bench bat? What do you think?
On the Reds right now, he's a starter. And, you know, I don't, you know, it's sometimes what happens, Bill, is that you come up and you surprise the league a little bit, and then the league adjusts to you. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying Scott Schebler is going to be an every year all-star, but he sure has some nice tools. He has some good bat speed. I think he was one of the top 10 in the league as far as exit bat velocity on balls coming off his bat this year, which is one of these new stats that I really happen to think is a valid something to look at. He's got good speed in the outfield. He doesn't have a very good arm. He's below average there. He's probably a pretty good base runner. And he's young, so, and he's left-handed, and I like the left-handed part a lot. So I'm willing to give him a shot again until somebody moves him out. You know, he's a starter here. Is he starting in Chicago for the Cubs? Probably not, but he's starting for the Reds.
There's a lot of people that think Nick Senzel will be here pretty quick. You know, you hear talk of the end of 17. I have a hard time believing that, but let's say early 18. Is Suarez an outfield candidate?
Is Senzel better than Suarez?
You know, I mean, we'll have to see.
I don't know that answer.
Yeah.
I mean, Suarez is 23, right?
24.
Okay. Well, and Senzel is probably 21, going to be 22 next year. So there's 2 years of difference, and Suarez already has his third year in the major league. So, Senzel better get here in a hurry. But it's one thing that happens when you get drafted out of college. You know, you get a late start on life in the major leagues compared to those guys that get there early. So, I'm the same with Suarez as I am with Schebler and Duvall. Until somebody pushes him out of the way, he's my guy at third base. Okay. Senzel, maybe the best thing since sliced bread, but really all he has to do is be better than Suarez, and we'll have to figure out whether that happens or not. And I haven't even gotten to see the guy play live yet.
Well, and to be fair, he's only played high A or low A.
Right.
And
at 20, was he 21, Senzel?
Yes. Yeah,
at 21, Suarez was he playing for the Detroit Tigers at 21?
If he wasn't 21, he wasn't 22.
Yeah, I'm not saying Senzel cannot catch up to him. And I'm not saying Nick Senzel is not going to be a really, really good major league player, because everybody who's seen him play in the minor leagues, they love him. I just can't wait to see him. I can't tell you anything about him now because I haven't seen him play.
Yeah. Catching. Where do you think the Reds see Devin Mesoraco at this point?
Boy, they see him with their fingers crossed, hoping that he can stay healthy. Another great kid, really good character kid.
Yep, absolutely.
Can he catch every day, or can he even catch on a part-time, regular basis after having, double hip surgeries? I don't know that. I don't think anybody can tell you that answer. It's going to really present an issue for them if he cannot catch at all, because then you're going to end up keeping three catchers, presumably, the same catching duo that you had this year with Cabrera and Barnhart, and then Mesoraco, unless you can find a home for Mesoraco playing first base on another ball club somewhere. But I don't know. It's a shame. You got Mesoraco and Cozart that are kind of in the same bag. You don't know whether these guys are going to be able to come back and play at the level or not.
Yeah, Devin's he's been a longtime favorite of Red Leg Nation. He's been on with us a number of times, and so is Tyler.
I love the guy. I mean, he's a throwback. He's a get your uniform dirty kind of guy. In your face if you're not playing the game the right way. I love Mesoraco.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're making decisions about the Reds in the future, you've got to take everything into consideration. And obviously, the ability to be on the field is the utmost.
Yeah. And Tucker Barnhart is another great guy. And I think this year, Tucker showed that he's going to be playing. He can play Major League Baseball for a long time and make a lot of money. I mean, he hit reasonably well, plays great defense. Showed this year that even despite his size, he can play pretty much every day. I think he really opened a lot of people's eyes this year.
I never got the size thing with catchers, to be honest with you. It used to be the catcher on your little league team was the biggest kid on the team because he couldn't run and you didn't want to put him at shortstop or in the outfield, right? So you put him behind the plate because he blocks everything because his body's big. Well, that's where the misnomer of catchers are. I can tell you that as a former pitcher, I'd rather throw to a catcher who gives the umpire the best view of the strike zone. And I don't think there's anybody in the league who gives the umpire a better view of the strike zone than Tucker Barnhart. I love the way the guy operates behind the plate. I love the way he's taken over this year a level of leadership, and he's proven everybody wrong who said that he couldn't play every day in the major leagues because of his size. Baseball is one of those last sports where it doesn't matter. And, I'm with you on Barnhart.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. And I think he surprised everybody with how well he hit this year. Let's talk about the pitching staff, because I think that's where most people would say that, all the questions, some of the strengths and a lot of the questions are. Is Discofani the Reds' number one starter going into 2017?
I don't know. I mean, if you don't have an ace of your staff, like a Clayton Kershaw or Noah Syndergaard or you know, Scherzer or one of these guys, then does it matter who's number one and who's number two and who's number three if everybody's the number three? So, I mean, yeah, he's your most solid guy, I think.
What do you think?
If Vasily Iglesias is healthy and can throw you 200 innings, he's your number one guy because he can be a number one. But I think as far as the realistically, you've got to put Steve Scapani right there in the top of your rotation.
Do you think?
So don't call him a number one because there are only about a handful of number ones out there.
Right, true number ones, yeah, aces. Do you think we've seen his best, or do you think he's still going to get better?
No, I think he's going to get better. I think that about midway through the year, it seemed like he scrapped his changeup. He went to fastball slider. He's got great tilt on the slider, goes straight down because of the way he holds it. And he's a gamer. He really is. Even though it took him 10 weeks to come off the disabled list with that rib injury, I think that he is still a guy that, I'd love to give the ball to, 30 times next year because I think he's going to keep in a lot of games.
There was some rumors or articles or stuff out there that said late in the year that the people were talking that the Reds may have rushed Homer back. You think they did?
No, I think that they did not. I think that Homer went, you're your own biological clock when that happens, And, maybe he pushed himself a little bit too hard. I really don't know. Nowadays they seem to be taking a little bit more time, the less time, coming back from Tommy John surgery. So I don't think it was anything to do with what the Reds did and their protocol. I mean, they have a pretty good idea what they need to do. But there was a big spotlight on Homer because he was the guy that was supposed to anchor this team. Mm-hmm. They gave him $100 million, and he hadn't pitched really much at all ever since they gave him that kind of money. So he's got some responsibility to that contract, and I think the Reds are hoping that he's going to be healthy enough to be able to earn it.
You see Brandon Finnegan's future as a starter or reliever?
I'm sorry, who, Lorenzen?
Finnegan.
Oh, Finnegan? I see him as a starter. I mean, I can tell you, I was like a lot of people at the beginning of the year that they like him as a reliever. But, hey, you know what I like about him? He has a lot of swings and misses. He seemingly throws the ball right down the pipe, and the guys swing through it. He's got a very quick arm. There's some deception there. He's a little bit over-aggressive as far as his delivery goes. I mean, as far as his effort level on every pitch. But that's going to come to him. Here's another guy that's only 22 or 23 years old.
Yep.
Pitching in the major league. So, and I love left-handers in the rotation, too. And it's been a long time since the Reds have had one.
The Red Leg Nation folks had a chance to at the game last time I saw you at the Reds game that day when we were down there and you circled us on the screen. We had a chance to do a Q&A with a couple of the Reds assistant GMs, and they were asked about Iglesias and Lorenzen, and they talked about maximizing the value of relievers by having them pitch more than one inning, and I kind of came out of that discussion or out of that Q&A with the feeling that they had kind of set their decision making already that Lorenzen was going to be a bullpen guy and that Iglesias, they didn't really know. Do you think the Reds have made a decision on either one of these guys? I know they're saying they haven't, but do you think that they're leaning one way or the other?
I think they're leaning certainly in the relief for Lorenzen, just based on what his stuff looks like the first time through a lineup versus the second and third time through. Just look at what his velocity of his fastball was when he became a starter, and then went from 96 to 98 all the way down to 92 to 94. He's rather straight with his fastball, so he needs that extra pop. I think he translates for me as a better reliever, and I think he's got the ability to be a late inning high leverage reliever too. I really do, and he's a special kid. I like him as a bullpen guy. I like Iglesias as a starter, but I don't know if his arm is going to withstand that. I don't know if he wants to be a starter. He may want to be a reliever. The idea of this two-inning thing, I don't want to accuse anybody of reinventing the game, but nowadays what most ball clubs are looking at is trying to fill their, having a one stud, fill the rest of the rotation with number three or four starters, and then have a lights out bullpen. And that formula seems to work. Now, if you can get a guy to go more than one inning, I'm all for that. Because I think every time you go to the bullpen, you bring in a certain percentage of unknown. Even with a consistent reliever, even with Aroldis Chapman, it's not guaranteed. The only guaranteed guy that I remember was Eric Gagne for a year. We all know that why that happened. And maybe Mariano Rivera for the majority of his career. But they don't make those guys very often. And so if I see Iglesias one day, or if I see Lorenzen one day coming out there in that first inning and he's just popping a ball and blowing people away, I'm sending him back out there for a second, and no doubt. If I get the feeling he's not pitching very well and he's struggling, I'm bringing somebody else in for a couple of innings. So I like the idea, but I think you better have some extra horses down there, because that extra inning is going to put an extra burden on those arms.
And they can't, you know, and it limits the number of times you can use them.
It does, but you're that might be a bad, that may be a good thing.
Yeah.
Because what research has shown is that when relief pitchers hit that 70 game mark about 3 years in a row, they either get injured or their stuff drops off significantly, and their team set themselves up for that.
Probably the other best story of this team is Dan Straley. Talk about Dan Straley for a couple minutes.
He's a pitcher's pitcher. He knows what he's doing. He has studied his art. He is a guy that for a long time he wanted to become a hard thrower. In fact, he went to Driveline Academy out in the Northwest so that he could learn how to throw harder. Then he realized that he doesn't need to throw harder, he just needs to throw smarter. So he's realized that there's a spot in the upper end of the strike zone where he can throw that ball and get guys out. And he's also figured out how to throw a slider without a traditional slider spin by putting all of his fingers on one side of the baseball. I played with a guy one time in Columbus for the Columbus Clippers named Rick Anderson. And Andy back, I think, in 1979, or maybe 79 or 80, he was one of the best years I've ever seen anybody have. And he threw this pitch called the Thing. And we called it the Thing because nobody could throw it like him. And that's the way Straley throws his slider. And that's why he gets so many great swings and misses, because it doesn't look like a slider. It looks like a fastball, but it breaks. So he's a smart guy. He knows what he wants to do. I like Straley. I mean, he was a diamond that the Reds found in the rough. And I hope that he's able to have a year like he did last year going into next year.
Let me ask you about some of the young guys and what you saw from them and where you think they'll be and what we can do with them. You know, what we can expect from them next year. John Lamb.
The injury issue is going to be the problem with him. I think that he, if he can get his back straightened out, the guy made it look easy at times, didn't he? And then other times he couldn't throw the ball over the plate. So he's got to figure out why he can't repeat his delivery. And that's the biggest thing for him.
Robert Stevenson,
For some reason he pitched better at the big leagues than he did at the minor leagues. But then again, here's a guy that needs to learn how to locate his fastball. He needs to follow Dan Straley around a little bit and realize that, you know, when you rear back and all you're getting is 95, that's hitting speed when it comes down the middle. So you've got to be able to locate nowadays. And he's got plenty of stuff, and he's got a great curveball. But he needs to figure out how to locate, and it comes back to repeating his delivery.
Cody Reed,
I like Cody Reed. I know a lot of people are like, oh, are you kidding? I think he's got great upside. He just needs a little more experience, maybe a lot more experience. He needs to figure out how to back it off a step. You know, I was at the very end of my career going to spring training with the Montreal Expos, and Randy Johnson was coming up. Now, I'm not comparing Cody Reed to Randy Johnson, but he is a big, tall, lanky left-hander where a little thing goes wrong and it makes a big problem at home plate. And I think that Reed needs to figure it out, minimize as much movement as he does in the delivery, throw his change. I mean, if I were the Reds, I'd have this guy on a program where he's throwing his changeup three times a week all winter long. and you know, the weights and the conditioning and all that stuff come second. I need to get him a feel of his changeup, because if he's got that, he can get big league hitters out and get them out all the time.
A guy that's an enigma to me, Tony Cingarani. Because he's still a young guy.
You know, I happen to really like Cingarani. And I can tell you that there are a number of other teams out there that really like Cingarani. I think the Reds have encouraged Cingarani to adopt the slider. And that's a pitch that is effective down around the knees. But Cingarani's sweet spot for him is at the upper end of the strike zone. You know, you're healthy when you're good as a pitcher when you pitch at the lower 3 inches of the strike zone or at the upper 3 inches of the strike zone. And when Cingarani threw that four-seam fastball upstairs, nobody caught up with it. But for some reason, somebody said, we need to teach this guy a slider. And in the process, he brought his fastball down from his upper sweet spot down to hitting speed, which he couldn't get all the way down around the knees. He got around the thigh. He starts getting beat around. His confidence goes down. He nibbles. He gets wild. And da-da-da. Everything goes haywire on him. I let Tony Cingarani go back to being Tony Cingarani, and this guy can get lefties and righties out. It doesn't matter.
Have you seen enough of Amir Garrett to have an opinion?
No, I haven't. I mean, my first time I saw him pitch, I thought, this guy's never going to pitch in the big leagues. He had a little short arm action, and the ball didn't move very much, and he couldn't throw strikes, and the slider, the breaking ball was really not much to it. Then he worked with Jeff Fassero a little bit, and I understand, and now when I saw some tapes of him, now he's getting great extension with his arm. He's got a really good downward slider. I did see him pitch in the Futures game on TV. I don't know what his future is. I would suspect that, you know, I know they want to groom him as a starter, but I would suspect he may be quicker to the big leagues as a reliever.
Okay. So the Reds have just completed their second consecutive 90-loss season, the first time since the 30s. But by what measure was this season a success?
By what measure would be what?
Was any part of this season a success?
Well, the second half certainly was a lot better than the first half. I mean, they expected to be bad. They were talking 100 losses at the beginning of the year. I actually heard the word tank in spring training. So, you know, the second half, I think that the way guys finished up, we saw a little bit of Peraza. We answered a lot of questions we talked about tonight. Barnhart behind the plate. Hamilton improvement. Shevler and Wright. You know, Suarez making steps forward. I think there's a lot to feel good about going forward, but I certainly wouldn't measure this year by the number of wins or losses. Or else you go into a winter depression.
Yeah, there is that. So you don't think there's any – you think the rebuild is on track for being competitive in 2018?
Yeah, I absolutely do. Okay. There's no question about it.
Okay, let me ask you a broadcasting question. How tough is it to broadcast a team that's going to lose, that you know is going to lose 90 games a year? Is it tough?
Well, it depends, Bill, I'll be honest with you. First of all, if you're going to lose 90 games, lose it with young guys that are coming on their way up, getting their brains beat in, rather than old guys who are on the way out. Nothing worse than an aging team that doesn't look like it cares, knowing it's going to get a lot of money. The individual players, that is, whether they win or lose. So I think in the second half, they turned things around, and it was interesting to broadcast. But from a broadcast standpoint, to be honest with you, whether they're up by 10 games or down by 22 games in the standings, I look at every game as its own storyline. It's got a pitching matchup. It's got a subplot. It's got maybe a manager or some coaches that played with the Reds or know these guys. There's always something going on behind the scenes that makes it worthwhile watching, and you hope you get a good, tight ball game. And I think that's what I was hoping for the most this year.
Over the years, we've been lucky to have some Reds Hall – well, we had a number of Reds Hall of Famers come on the podcast. Tom Browning's been on. Jim Maloney was on. That's probably one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. I was just in awe of talking to Jim Maloney. And I think the Reds Hall of Fame does a great job overall picking the players that they induct. Let me ask you a few others. Brandon Phillips is a no-doubt Reds Hall of Famer, isn't he?
Yes.
Jay Bruce?
Yes.
Adam Dunn?
Yes.
Would it, and you probably know this, but I hadn't thought of. You know, Reggie Sanders isn't in the Reds Hall of Fame.
You know what? I've only been on the committee to vote for the Hall of Fame one time, and that was the year that they put in Ronnie Oster because I jumped up and down the table and said, "Are you kidding me?" So anyway. Yeah, I don't know if Reggie belongs in there or not, to be honest with you. I mean, he moved on and had a lot of other years elsewhere. You know, the problem with the Hall of Fame is that you run out of guys to put in there. That's why you're seeing them put in so many of these guys in the 1800s.
Yeah, Reggie had eight good years for the Reds, though.
Well, eight good years, you know what? If you're going to put Jay Bruce in, you better put Reggie Sanders in.
And I'll admit my prejudice. I think Freddie Norman ought to be in the Reds Hall of Fame, but that's just me.
I agree with you 100%.
And we had Freddie on one time too. What a great conversation that was.
Oh yeah.
Reds announced today, Chris, that they extended their deal with Fox Sports to, I think it's 2032, rather than start their own network. How does this affect the team's finances moving forward, do you think?
Well, you know, I'm sure the terms have not been disclosed, unless they were disclosed in the press, but they've not been disclosed to me. In fact, I didn't even know how long the term of the deal was until you just brought it up. So it's going to make a difference. But I don't know if that deal kicks in 2017 or 2018.
They called it an extension, so I would think it's 2018, but I don't remember exactly how it read.
Yeah. So I think it's going to make a big difference. But again, everything is relative. You know, you're going to have more money in 2018 to spend if you're the Reds, but so are the Cubs. Look what they're building around Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
You know, their TV deal's got to come up pretty soon. So everything is relative. The very difficult part of the economics of baseball, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, everybody else has said it, you know, you get to the big league or you get to the big dance, you know, one year, it's just so hard to sustain. It really is. That's why what the Cardinals have done has been just so impressive. That's the model that you're trying to do, is to get there every year, give your team a chance to be in the playoffs every year. Some years you may not get in there like this year. You know, they were on a shoestring and fumes the last month of the season. But that's a tough model for a small market, is to figure out how to get there every year. But I think the TV deal will help the Reds do that. But they got to spend their money smart. They can't make some bad decisions and expect that to pay off.
Do you see the Cubs as a potential dynasty?
I'm sorry?
Do you see the Cubs as a potential dynasty being very good for quite a while?
Yeah, I see them potentially because they've got really good young players. They've got smart people running the operation, and they have a lot of money to spend.
Yep.
And that's a perfect storm.
Yeah, it's a tough combination to beat. Well, Chris, as always, you've been more than generous with your time again today, and I want to thank you very much, and I hope we can get you on here again soon, maybe before the season starts.
Well, you tell Chad Dobson I'm still waiting for that first check.
I'm going to tell him, and you got back pay coming.
with negative interest, if that's what it takes.
You know, he's a lawyer, so you know how that is.
Oh, geez, no wonder. Well,
All right.
Well, hey, Bill, it was great visiting with you, and keep up the good work. I check in on you guys often.
Okay,
and,
thanks.
And I will continue to do so.
I appreciate it. Take care, my friend.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.